Hey there, we're back from our Easter holidays, relaxed, refreshed and ready to go with another PhD cast from Australia. This week we're talking about Fanta. Their new campaign invites you to mix flavours through a TV ad, but also through an app. We'll be having a conversation about that. Also, Game of Thrones fans break all records for illegal downloading, not the kind of records the broadcast would want to see broken. We discuss all things Game of Thrones and legal downloading, and also the best of April Fools. Gmail launches blue email, YouTube closes down, now the competition's over, and Barclaycard launch Paywag. This is the PhD cast. Hello, welcome back. Joining me for the PhD cast this week are PhD cast regulars Stuart Gurney.
Hello again.
Nicola Davey.
Hello again.
And also joining us is Emma, All Things Social at PhD. Hello.
Hello there.
Did everyone have a good Easter?
It was lovely. I didn't eat any eggs.
Where did everybody get up to, apart from not eating eggs?
Hunter Valley.
Hunter Valley,
there
nice.
For the day, which is very nice.
Threadbow, awesome. Very cold.
The races, won. Which is amazing.
I love the way we're summarising it in words.
Fantastic Easter in no more than three syllables. Very, very good. Fantastic, it wasn't that cold, it was about zero, which doesn't really count as cold.
Freezing.
So, up first this week, Fanta's new ad invites us to get playful and mix up their flavours. Let's hear some of it. Brilliant. So, what do we all make of that?
I think it's an interesting initiative. Play is obviously their platform and akin to the Coca-Cola platform of happiness. It's a really nice territory, considering they're focusing on kind of targeting teens and tweens. So, really trying to get involvement and participation. It feels like a nice territory. Questions are whether it's articulated and does the campaign manifest that? Well, I guess, what do people think?
I suppose the only thing I thought about it is there is not really that sort of connection to the sort of real life behaviour. So you're almost being sort of asked to mix up products and produce something that you can't actually go and buy, which I thought was quite a strange way, you know, strange way to go about it. And it seems quite a convoluted process. Like it's not as easy, or you know, it's not like there's only one or two steps. It's quite a lot to do.
For anyone who doesn't know how it works, you've been to the Facebook page for Lab, which is what the invitation to get involved does. What happens when you get there? What goes on the site?
Well, you land on a page, and I think there's two different ways you can do it. So first of all, it encourages you to download a phone application. I guess from that, there's games on that. There's a way to collect tokens. But you can also do a simplified version of the game within the application. And there's things like you can win a Fanta branded Samsung Galaxy Tab, which seems quite a cool prize, especially for sort of teenagers and stuff.
If you're like a 15-year-old, you'd quite like that, right?
Yeah, absolutely.
I would.
I just think that, you know, you create this sort of mixed product, and then it's just sort of, I don't know where you go from there. I don't know there's sort of much.
I guess for me, maybe because I'm not in the demographic.
We probably should declare an interest that both of us have worked on this brand previously in other jobs as well.
But I'm not sure if I'm right or wrong, but I don't know if that insight's right. So does that behaviour exist? So that's why it could be really good, because if that's an actual insight for this audience, then brilliant. Do people actually mix different drinks and turn it into other drinks? I don't personally know that behaviour exists, but if they've tapped into that insight, then the articulation of this campaign is really good for that audience. I guess the other thing I'd say, why I think it's potentially quite interesting, is that although it's quite a convoluted process, it's asking a lot of consumers, does it matter? So it just gives a platform and something for people to talk about, and I think at a brand that struggles to try and get any traction and do something different, it's just the opportunity to use media and broadcast to talk about an initiative and to get on people's radar. So, I mean, it depends on what their KPIs are. So if it's about trying to get people involved, then absolutely probably convoluted. If it's about trying to get people, just trying to get a distinctive positioning for Fanta, yeah, and trying to get it on people's radar using an insight that potentially is or isn't right, then that I think could be conceived as quite an interesting campaign.
Nick, what do you make of it?
Oh, I'm going to be honest, I'm not a big fan of the Fanta campaign. I think that the 30-second TVC doesn't do the campaign justice in that I don't think there's a strong enough call to action so that people actually know what they're expected to do. To Stu's point, if there is a truism and an insight that that there's a load of people going out there and mixing up their different Fanta flavours already, maybe they don't need as much encouraging. For me, off the bat, being, you know, 30-something old, I'm not mixing my Fantas, so...
Are you not
mixing my Fanta flavours.
Only with vodka.
I know. Well, Magic Fanta is...
Actually, it is.
Another campaign that we talk about.
That's a whole different lab.
It is literally magic. But for me, I just think that the TVC lets the campaign idea down a little bit, and I don't think it is explicit enough in what is required. There's one lockup at the end that talks about going to the Facebook page or downloading something from the App Store. So I think while it could have been a nice campaign thought, I actually think that the route in wasn't explicit enough.
Yeah, I mean, I totally agree. I think the weak link in this is the execution of the TV. I think the TV, it feels a little bit clumsy. I don't like the whole syncopated or synthesizer voice. I think the execution is not great. And that might be because it's a global ad. It might be for a whole load of reasons. But it may be that it's got to work in lots of different markets. But I think the idea of putting the product at the centre of it, and the idea that having to... I mean, let's not forget, in order to do this, you've got to buy more different flavours. So the one... If this works in any way, shape or form, what's going to happen is you're going to increase weight of purchase. So weight of purchase per person, it's certainly going to increase if they get any traction on this, and that can only be a good thing for an FMCG company. And I think it does make them distinctive. If you look at orangey or other fruit drinks in this market, it does give them or gives voice to that distinctive proposition they have, or makes that proposition they have distinctive.
I think what's interesting is that we're starting to criticise the creative, which feels a little bit wrong from a media point of view.
Yeah.
Actually, I mean, it doesn't really matter if we're buying this, if we're subscribing to kind of the Ehrenberg Bass thinking that we do. Actually, from evidence from a lot of FMCG brands that I've worked on, it actually doesn't matter if the ad's crap, because quite often just being salient and cost efficient around that saliency is actually really important. So I think let's not get head up and focusing on the articulation and the creative execution of that, because actually it doesn't really matter from a media perspective and from a comms perspective. If it gives something that Fanta to say for over a consistent period, then actually that does a job.
Yeah, I think that's absolutely right. I think it does do that job of giving them that distinctive proposition. And I mean, it's working in social for you. Clearly social is a really important component of this, being able to, as they say, the Fanta campaign lab campaign is all about celebrating self-expression by inspiring Aussies to test out mix and then find their favourite mixes. Implicit in this is getting people to share. Is it a great platform for sharing?
Well, I mean, the nature of sort of Facebook and certainly in that sort of target audience as well is this sort of idea of games and, you know, sharing with your friends. Perhaps if there was an element there of more sort of competition between friends, I think perhaps that might be slightly more compelling with that kind of audience. And it'd be really, interested to see, because as I said, we don't really know if this has come from an insight or it's just their, you know, that's something they wanted to do. But because you're sort of creating these drinks virtually at the moment, and whether that then transcends onto a, you know, people actually, you know, creating these drinks, sharing that on Facebook. I think the campaign's still a little bit new to have seen any of that yet, but it would be great, you know, if they use the page to encourage people to share their creations on the page, because then it's a bit more, instead of just this sort of virtual drink, you are saying, actually, yeah, go and get it, go and buy it, mix it up with your friends and show us like a video, show us a picture. So a bit more of sort of encouragement to get people sharing that drink in real life. I think it'd be good to see them do that in the next few weeks.
It actually reminds me of quite a famous example quite early on a couple of years ago around vitamin water, vitamin water, around, they did a whole social media campaign around getting crowdsourcing a flavour.
Yeah.
So if it, and what they did effectively was kind of a similar activation as Fanta starting to lay down, but then they actually produced the product.
Yeah.
And it sounds really obvious now because millions of brands have done it, but actually 5 or 6 years ago, that's quite an innovative approach. So it'd be interesting to see if Fanta do adopt that product centricity and turn it into something. My hunch is that they won't, and that's probably because I don't think they need to. So I think just encouraging people to go out and buy two different types of Fanta is driving frequency and purchase.
And that's great, that's great for the customer as well. So it's great for trade if Coke have got a story to go and say to them, look, we're encouraging people to go and buy now multiple flavours, then it's just going to get them greater share of shelf and, you know, greater distribution through their trade as well.
So from Fanta to pirates, interviews
that's just a segue.
Seamless. So ad news. You've added a segue, but I think you also make a segue between these stories.
Okay, good. Sorry, thanks, Matt.
If anyone has any questions you want us to answer on the podcast, then let us know. Last night, Monday saw the return of Game of Thrones season 3 to Foxtel's showcase channel, Game of Thrones at the Wall. And HBO and Foxtel, as reported by Ad News, were celebrating with 224,000 consolidated viewers, double that of last year's first episode, which attracted 113,000. But meanwhile, other records were being broken. File-sharing news website Torrent Freak reports that the show's return generated unprecedented activity on torrent sites. And Australia has kept, as reported, its crown with the highest piracy rate of any country. Over 1 million downloads in less than a day globally. And Sydney and Melbourne were 3 and 4 in the world in terms of cities downloading that, which, given populations behind London and Paris, is fairly significant. HBO, of course, has got love-hate with this because it hates that people download Game of Thrones, but it is the show to be talked about.
Yeah.
And so that many people seeing it at the same time does give it an awful lot of cultural conversation, I would say, which will only help viewing. What do we make of Game of Thrones? By the way, no spoilers, because I've only seen season one.
Okay. I've seen season one. I watched, what, the new episode?
Yes.
Yeah, I watched it as well. How did you watch it, Nicola?
I watched it. Well, this is interesting, actually. So I have Monday nights, Game of Thrones nights now, which will also be Game of Thrones and Mad Men nights.
Do you dress up?
Not yet.
Do you dress up as Don Draper and go fighting?
We're not that kind of podcast, Chris. No, I don't dress up to Game of Thrones. It is very much for me and my friends a social occasion where we're now getting around the telly.
Thanks for the invite.
Yeah. As I said, my friends and I get together and sit around the TV and actually watch it. Shared viewing is an occasion and love it. It's amazing.
So I watched it last night, actually. I downloaded it from my Apple TV because it's also available for download automatically, which is interesting. I had other friends watching it the same night, and so we still had that, although we were in the same room, the social media, we were texting each other the whole time. So we'd almost created our own sense of even though in
different. And especially if that's now sort of been coming on a global scale, if you think about this sort of within the space of perhaps less than 24 hours, people around the globe are all watching this at the same time.
Yeah.
That drive in sort of social conversation, sort of people tweeting and, you know, talking on Facebook and whatever platform it might be, will just be sort of sharing that experience with just people, not just people in their living room or people down the road, but it becomes quite a sort of almost global social occasion for people that are really, really excited about the
eventized telly or eventized moments is still it's a human need, isn't it? We do want to feel part of something. So I don't think we'll ever lose eventized moments in TV, but how we create those eventized moments might be different. So be at a party or just be that via social media.
I don't know what else or, you know, the networks need to do. So they're fast tracking the content from the US 2 hours, so it's getting aired 2 hours later than what it did live in the US. It's not putting ads in the content. I don't know how else they can encourage people to watch it as live in this market, because you know, it clearly, the efforts, the great efforts, and I really applaud Showcase for putting in the effort about getting this content to people.
And not running ads is fairly
fair. And not running ads. But
are you sure they didn't run ads? I can't believe they didn't run ads. It's mental.
I'm sure they did it.
That, I mean, that's officially heretical in Australia.
Yeah.
Given the sort of the viewers that you would expect as well, that's quite sort of...
Okay, I watched it as like, now yourself, making myself doubt myself that maybe there were ads in there. They weren't, I'm sure.
We'll see.
Damn it!
Check on Nicola's blog if you want
check
to.
Check on my blog.
So let's backtrack this a little bit. What is it about Game of Thrones that makes it so right and ripe for shared viewing and that shared viewing experience?
It's the for me, I think it's the complex narrative and just a lot of the hidden elements to it. So you almost require group discussion to translate and get the best out of it, which is why it does lend itself to a social occasion, interestingly. I can't remember ever watching an episode and not talking to someone else in the room and going, what does this mean? Or is that person?
Where would they come from again? Yeah. Or why were they? I thought he had gone. I definitely think it's the narrative, which is amazing. And it's the characters. Like, there's so many. Jon Snow, our favourite. There's so many characters. And I think that different characters really strongly appeal to different people. So you have your favourites.
What else can broadcasters do? They're showing it as live, pretty much, two hours behind. They're not putting ads in it.
Potentially.
we think. What else can broadcasters do? Is this now inevitable?
So they showed it twice on Monday Showcase. They had it on at, I think it was like 3:30 or 3:45 or something, which was the 2 hours fast track. And then they had it again at like in prime, so 8 o'clock. I'm sure it was 8 o'clock. What else can they do? I seriously don't know what else they can do. Like, and if you're HBO, what do you expect to have from the distribution networks?
Well, I think it's got to be about having your fingers in lots of different pies. So the fact that I can download it on iTunes relatively next day is actually really important. So I can watch it on my Apple TV in my own time. So I think it's just making sure you've now got a sort of a closed wall around content. It's about getting it out there as much as possible and trying to get that longer tail of viewers in whatever environment they're watching it.
But what's the sustainable business model for HBO and the producers to be doing that in the absence of having ads and networks to be selling on?
I think that when post the internet, I think that loads of media businesses have now got to accept that there is a degree of freemium in their model. Then all media businesses and organisations have got to work out what are we going to accept is going to be given away for free, and then what can we do to maximise those elements that we can charge for.
Yeah.
The print industry's gone through this, the movie and music industries have certainly gone through this, and it's going to start hitting TV really soon. I mean, I think if it hasn't already, I think we're only going to see more of this. I think TV producers and studios are going to have to understand and have strategies for how they accept that some stuff is just going to have to be given away, and there's going to be tolerable limits to that. And in this instance, if it's worth the buzz they get, which can then be monetized through network deals and especially through DVD and iTunes and other platforms, then that's probably all well and good, right?
And merchandise. I mean, I've seen loads of the Game of Thrones content.
Well, you've got your Jon Snow t-shirt, and you love it.
Jon Snow. No, I haven't. My bread's spread. I've got my Game of Thrones. No, I haven't. But like, I do think that in the same way that music then had to revert back, or has had to revert back to live performances, it's just finding different ways to take that content and take that idea and that platform and leverage it in different environments to try and make some money. I think how do we solve the problem of they've done so much is really interesting. For me, it feels like there's a really interesting insight that we're all tapped into, and that's it's a social moment. So at the moment, they haven't really activated it from a media or a comms point of view that makes it a social moment, creates a sense of occasion. That's a massive missed opportunity. So if you've got that occasion, they should be trying to create them wherever they are and almost eventizing it as much as possible.
That would be
my solution. So that's a free one for you, Showcase.
Well, let's talk very briefly about HTC, because HTC, obviously climbed a PhD, they've launched a Facebook phone. They've launched a Facebook phone. It does. Facebook phone. Emma, what's a Facebook phone?
It's something that's been talked about in loads of different ways, and speculation has been going on for ages about what exactly this will be. Will it be its own handset? Will it integrate and stuff like that? So we finally here. We finally know what it's going to be about. Well, we know a few things. So they've the new HTC phone has now had is launched with a deep Facebook integration into across most of the functionality across the whole phone. It now comes with several different of Facebook applications already built in, and from what I understand, it's much more sort of user friendly. Because at the moment, you have the main Facebook app, and then you have a Pages app if you're a Pages manager, and then you've got like a Messenger app, and so I think they've tidied that up for this phone, so it's a lot sort of better and easier to use. And also it comes with Instagram built in as well, which is certainly the sort of first phone to have ever done that. So I haven't had a look or seen what it actually functions like yet. Of course, we're sort of aware that the iPhone did something. It's been sort of with Twitter for quite a while now. So I don't know if it's much sort of deeper than that. What makes it better? What makes it different? So yeah, send me a free phone.
Yeah,
I'll let you know.
Spoken like a true social media manager. I've had a look at the ad. I've watched the ad for Facebook Home, and it looks like just a really great Facebook experience, but just a Facebook experience is what it looks like. What's interesting for me is that it's actually rather than, and obviously HTC, you've got the exclusive, but it's actually an Android platform, full stop. So it means that if you're running Android, which I now do by my Google phone, that you get the Google phone, that I'll try that on my phone as well once it comes to Australia. So, but the experience does look really, really good. Is this a massive change of Facebook, or is this just an extension? What's your guys' take on this in terms of the Facebook HTC, the tie-up, and the broader play? Full stop.
Well, it kind of makes sense. The review art that I've read on Mashable around it was really interesting, because it was talking about it, about, you're right, it's Android, but actually all that Facebook functionality brings to it is a home screen. So it's just like a Facebook home screen, and that's it, which is sounds really simple, and I don't know if that's a bad or a good thing yet, because I don't know enough about it, because that could be just a great way of, like, you've got a home screen and that's how you interface and link back to social media. So
it could also be a great way of just being late to a lot more stuff, because I keep getting distracted by my phone's home screen.
Yeah, then definitely not getting you the Facebook home. But I think, so in terms of, do we think it's a great move? Obviously, because Facebook is still a massive player, and I guess what the question is, what does it mean for brands? Does that mean greater saliency? Facebook has always struggled to commercialise Facebook, apart from ads. So is this another opportunity, potentially, to get some greater traction? And we're seeing increasingly lots of statistics, and there was some from Coca-Cola around buzz metrics, I think we mentioned last week, not proving any short-term ROI. We're seeing loads of car manufacturers demonstrating the same thing. So it's a really interesting play in context of a lot of increasingly growing speculation around the value of social media, not to undermine your job.
Social's a lot more than Facebook, that's what I
said. Absolutely.
I just mentioned who the target audience is for the technology and for the handset tie-in, because kind of all the cool kids are getting a bit of Facebook fatigue, short, aren't they, really? I mean,
there is a lot of that.
You two just speaking for yourselves now.
No, I love Facebook.
No, not at all, but
there is a definite backlash. It's been recorded, hasn't it, in various instances. That just people not using it in the same way, and Instagram is becoming, ironically, is becoming a greater platform, and platform of preference for the cooler kids.
Yeah, so I just think my question is, I wonder who it's going to appeal to, and with the tie-up with HTC is quite an interesting brand to partner with. Obviously, it's HTC's position in the market is that of a challenger brand, and Facebook is certainly by no means a challenger platform. So, I wonder, would be intrigued to see who will buy it.
Because for me, it's basically a great marketing association. So, if you don't know very much about handsets and stuff, which predominantly not many people do, it's a great way for kind of the laggards or the late majority to actually navigate into the market. So, I know Facebook is all the time, therefore I get a Facebook phone. It feels like a really clever
Facebook
marketing ploy.
In terms of a sort of a social and mobile integration, Facebook is your mainstream. it's the one that you know, there is this sense of fatigue, and I know that's happening with probably sort of, we feel it might be more because we work in this sort of industry and stuff. So I think for as a trial and to get that bigger mainstream audience, the sort of the tie up with Facebook is probably quite an obvious choice.
If you've got any comments on your Facebook fatigue, do let us know.
You not via Facebook.
Not via Facebook. Well, you can do it via Facebook. Tell us about your Facebook fatigue at facebook.com/PhD Australia. Or you can tweet us at PhD Australia or hashtag PhD Australia too. Finally this week, it's April, and that means that a few days ago we saw a round of April Fool's marketing campaigns. Let's talk about three of them. Let's talk about, and if you haven't heard these or seen them, then I recommend you pause the PhD cast and Google them immediately, or other search engines which are available.
We should also thank Tanya for finding these.
We should also thank Tanya down in Melbourne. So Tanya, hello. Hope you're listening, and thank you very much for sourcing them. They were a brilliant selection at our weekly foreplay session. Favourite April Fools of these?
YouTube for me, I think. I thought when I watched it, I sort of, there was almost that kind of nervous laughter that I was having, because I was watching it going, imagine if that really was true. There's an element that they really could have done that. I just thought it was very sort of clever, very funny, quite a nice showcase of some of its most famous videos. They got back some people that have appeared in the last sort of 8 years and some of their sort of biggest videos, which was quite nice. Really made me laugh out loud.
I think it says a lot about modern culture when I saw the Charlie Bit My Finger kids. I had this sense of nostalgia. It's insane that in 8 years, look at them all grown up, all these YouTube stars that become part of popular culture.
It's like, it would make you either go back to one that you remember or go and find one perhaps that you've missed that was in this ad. So it actually is making you go and use the platform as well.
I loved all the ideas because they were driving functionality, so it's a great excuse for just leveraging how each of the platforms and just showcasing some of the functions. So Barclaycard, the whole tap it and pay mechanic, i.e. it was for a dog, which is a bit strange, but actually it allowed Barclaycard to do a really simple job of showcasing how it worked. Brilliant. The Gmail one, it just showcased some of the functionality of Gmail, but in blue. Awesome. And then for YouTube, it was just, as you said, like leveraging some of the videos. So for me, it's a brilliant play, and using April Fools as an excuse to kind of reiterate and go over some of your distinctive assets and some of your functionality of your products and brands. It's like a great idea.
Yeah, I'm going to go as far to say that I think this year was a watershed for exactly that. I don't think that April Fools have been like this thing that brands have sometimes done, but they've just really been a fool. I think this year, a few of them really genuinely unlocked. Mm. One, doing an April Fool, but two, doing it in a way that genuinely communicated product benefits. And they'll probably see a return from those fools back into the business.
Return from the fools.
It's like ROF.
Yeah, I really like
ROFL.
ROFL?
Rolling the floor laughing. Oh, social media.
I was doing return on fools.
Yeah, I know.
Nicola Fingers help. Final closing thought on the April Fool's executions that we saw that Tanya, again, brilliant, well done Tanya, mm-hmm. Sent through, was just actually how much humour and tone of voice and that tongue-in-cheek behaviour and attitude just resonates and cuts through with such great degree. And that's one of the things that I absolutely applaud somebody like Barclaycard, that a finance brand that can be quite steady to stay and gets to do it.
Cool. So that's my part. I'm distracting Nicola because I want to say hi to Toby in the summer, but I've forgotten where he is. Where's Toby again?
Dubai.
Anything else?
Dubai.
Okay, it's descending into ridiculousness. Thank you, Nicola.
Thank you, podcast listeners. Bye-bye.
Thanks, Stuart.
Thank you.
And a big thank you to Emma for joining us this week.
Thank you.
Will you come back and join us another time?
I definitely will, yeah.
Come back and join us in LOL with us some other time. That was PhD Cast. Have a great week. And once again, hi, Toby and Dubai. Bye, everyone.
Bye.
That was kids' TV.
That was like our worst podcast.
Made me laugh. Yeah. And if we're not doing it for ourselves, who are we doing it for?
Well, that is very true.